don't pull out. But this time, I'll pull out. If they don't give me a proper convention, okay? Charlotte, do it. And we'll see what happens. Happy Memory Day.
Gaslighter, denier, doing anything to get your ass farther. Gaslighter, big timer, repeating all of the mistakes of your father.
The president was in Michigan today touring a Ford Motor plant that's making ventilators now. And you're supposed to wear a mask in Michigan by order of the governor. The attorney general of Michigan said the president had a legal, social, and moral responsibility to wear one when he visited the plant. So, of course, he didn't. Everyone who worked at the plant did. The president did not. Although he again made the ridiculous claim that he technically kind of maybe did wear a mask.
I had one on before. I wore one in this back area. I had goggles. Goggles and a mask right back there. But no, where I had it in the back area, I did put a mask on. So I put it on, and it was very nice. It looked very nice. But I didn't want to give the press the pleasure of seeing it. I actually, honestly, I think I looked better in the mask. I really did. As they say, I did have it on. Here's my mask right here. And I liked it very much.
Why would you not be wearing it?
Because in this area,
why would you not be wearing it here, sir?
Why is he handing it to the audio guy? Here, take this. Has my germs all over him. Take it. Why is he giving it out? The truth is, you know, he did wear a mask for a minute. TMZ got a rare shot of Donald Trump in a mask. But what is the point of this? Either you wear a mask or you don't wear a mask.
I mean, if he's not wearing a mask, I'm not going to wear a mask. If he's not worried, I'm not worried.
The president.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to continue to wear the mask.
If someone is wearing a mask, they're not doing it to represent what political party they're in or what candidates they support. They might be doing it because they've got a five-year-old child who's been going through cancer treatments. They might have vulnerable adults in their life who are currently have COVID and are fighting.
This is not about politics. This is not about whether you're liberal or conservative, left or right, Republican, Democrat. We wear the mask, and it's been very clear what the studies have shown. You wear the mask not to protect yourself so much as to protect others.
Experiments by a team in Hong Kong found that the coronavirus transmission rate via respiratory droplets or airborne particles dropped by as much as 75% when surgical masks were used.
Your second question was? I couldn't hear you. Can you take it off because I cannot hear
you? I'll just speak louder, sir.
Oh, okay, because you want to be politically correct. Go ahead.
No, sir, I just want to wear the mask.
Go ahead.
The president is supposed to lead by example. And I watched the president yesterday wearing no mask, you know, and some making fun of the fact I wore a mask. The truth of the matter is that I think you're supposed to lead by example. He's a fool, an absolute fool to talk that way. I mean, every leading doc in the world is saying we should wear a mask when you're in a crowd.
So do you think wearing a mask projects strength or weakness?
Leadership. What it presents and projects is leadership. Presidents are supposed to lead, not engage in folly and be falsely masculine.
It's ironic that a man who is refusing to put on a mask wears a mask in so many other parts of his public and private life. He masks his dim-wittedness. He masks his inability to form tight relationships. He masks his finances. He masks his devotion to the American public. He masks his inability to really lead effectively. And when the moment comes to actually put on a mask for practical purposes and to prove that he's a leader, he refuses to wear it.
Well, we all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone has gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk and some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we love to try them on.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
No, excuse me, it's called mail fraud. Okay, look it up. It's called mail fraud. And I know you're probably saying mail fraud, you should call that trans, right? Because it's the PC term. But I'm using the real word, mail fraud, okay? And that's what the Dems want to do. They want to do all this voter fraud by using the mail. And once the mails, okay? No, believe me, you know what's happening, okay? OAN knows what's happening. They, you know, believe me, they are strong on stamps. At least three of them have great tramp stamps. So they know mail like you wouldn't believe. Don't talk to the nice ladies at OAN. You're hardly a lady, okay? You're like a nasty, we call you a barely woman person. So, sit down. So the point is, the Democrats, okay, they want to use this mailing system, okay, the Postal Service, which by the way is a total failure. They've been taken advantage by everybody, doing a horrible job, including Jeff Bezos, okay, who's basically like stealing from them at this point. So what we're doing is we want to stop the mail voting, okay? Because once you have mail voting, Mike, you know what happens when you let the mail vote? You get female votes, and we don't, you know, you and mother don't want that, okay? So we're trying to stop, it's called a slippery slope. When you let the mail vote, then all of a sudden you get female voting. And then you don't even have a country. And we have to get our country back. Okay, no mask. I saw that movie with Cher in the 80s. Remember the guy with the huge head? Mask. That's what happens when you wear a mask. So no masks, no male voting, hopefully no female voting, and we'll see what happens.
I've thought about upgrading my phone so I could have a better camera, just in case I have to record myself or another person's interaction with the police. If I'm dead, I don't want any blurry video to cast any doubt that I'm lying. I want crystal clear evidence after my death.
Could be wrong. This is Karen Werner, Wave Farm Radio Artist Fellow, and I'm happy to share a piece with you from the Radio Art Archive by Saul Reza. The piece is called Future Radio and was produced in 2019. Saul Reza is a composer, audio engineer, and radio producer from Argentina. She's interested in, quote, the way we perceive time and space through our senses and how sounds influence the perception, quote, I appreciate how Future Radio steps into radio space and asks, who are you? Future Radio is just under 4 minutes long.
Hello, hello, hello,
hello,
hello,
hello. Someone heard me? Hello. Who are you? Where are you? Hello? Hello,
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 hello.
Are you real? Who are you? Are you real? Thank you. there? What time is it?
What time is it?
Someone hear me? What time is it?
What time is it?
Who are you?
Hello,
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 hello.
Hello?
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 The magic of radio is its immateriality and invisibility. Radio is the space. In the beginning was the voice. Radio Future. Future Radio.
You just heard Future Radio by Sol Reza. To learn more about Sol Reza and many other radio artists, please visit the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.
Hello all, this is Michelle Masurjan for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network, and my guest today is Rebecca Girard, statewide housing organizer for Citizen Action. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you, Michelle, for having me again.
Okay, so Rebecca, there have been a few bills going through the Senate right now which affect tenants, and the first bill is looking at rent relief for $100 million fund to pay only residential rents for people who have lost their income due to COVID-19 pandemic. What are your concerns about that bill?
Thank you for asking. We have a large amount of concerns about this bill. So the system that it sets up, and this is a new bill that had just come out, and so there were a lot of other options on the table that are not being allowed to be voted on. The system this sets up creates real potential for harm on behalf of tenants while essentially just writing a check to landlords. And so the way it works is that if you apply for this voucher, if you apply for this program, tenants are going to have to go through a really hard to maneuver and exclusionary process in order to even qualify. If they qualify, their income pre-COVID-19 situation will be considered, and they will be expected to pay that amount at their rent burden status that they had paid prior to the pandemic. So if they were rent burdened before and they were paying 40 to 50% of their income in rent, they'll be expected to contribute that same amount. At the same time, that qualification, should they qualify, means that the rest of their rent would be a check issued directly to the landlord. So what do we have? We have landlords getting money from the state when we're constantly being told resources are few, without having to prove that they are having any financial impact whatsoever, while simultaneously keeping the tenant at the rent burden status that they were at pre-pandemic. So that is first and foremost the most deeply concerning part of this. It does not relieve the stress of paying rent for the tenant, and it hands money to the landlord without protecting the tenant in that situation in any way. Because if they can't pay the other portion of that rent, then they're still vulnerable to eviction, and all sorts of other retaliatory and predatory behaviors. It also targets the population at 80% AMI. And so when we look at an amount of money such as 100 million and how few people it's going to reach, we believe that it should reach those most impacted first. And this instead is going to reach those with the most resources, not the least.
Okay, so we were kind of talking about that. In Albany County, the AMI would be $64,800 for a family of three. That would be 80% of the AMI. So your annual income would be $64,800 for a family of three. A 30% rent burden would be about $1,600 a month. So is that the top?
Correct. That's the top. And what we know through these formulas is they will always be directed to the top of the range. So we are going to have people who make $30,000, $40,000, even $50,000, who are the most impacted in our region or less, right? Or even less. And those people are not going to be eligible for this program, while people who are making more, right? And everybody should get help. But people who are making more are going to be the ones that get help before people that are making less.
So we're looking for the landlord should have to apply because they should prove that they're losing income. And then I understand that Housing and Community Renewal is going to be setting up and going to then delegate the administration of this program. And they're going to set up, HCR is also going to set up priority preferences. Do you have any concerns about that?
We do, knowing how HCR manages housing programs that are under their scope. They're understaffed and therefore ineffectual. And so we have no reason to believe that this wouldn't roll out in the exact same way.
The other bill that's coming up is a bill to permanently extend the eviction moratorium instead. What are your concerns about that bill?
Yeah, we have a lot of concerns about this bill, especially as it applies to any area outside of New York City. And we want to be really clear, there was another eviction moratorium bill sponsored by Assemblymember Harvey Epstein that could have been put to a vote, and Senate and Assembly leadership are choosing not to let their members vote on that bill. They are not allowing for it to be voted on. And so this bill allows for you to raise the financial impact of COVID-19 in a non-payment eviction case. That's still harmful because it's dragging tenants into court. It's allowing for judicial discretion. And this bill also allows for, if you qualify, while you can't be evicted, your wages can be garnished. But let's take all that off the table for a second, Michelle. This bill doesn't cover any tenant in any area of upstate New York. It does not cover any unregulated tenants. And there are 5 million unregulated tenants in this state. And so those tenants can always get a holdover eviction, which is a no-fault eviction. And there is nothing in this bill language that gives them a defense or a protection against a holdover or no-fault eviction. And so the entirety of upstate will actually not be impacted in any way, shape, or form by this bill.
Banning evictions during the pandemic is basically saying your rent's still going to be due, and you have to prove, again, that you can't pay because of COVID-related. But can you use that COVID defense? And you're saying even if you're unregulated, it's not going to help anybody in upstate rural areas.
Because the bill specifically says that defense can be raised in a non-payment eviction proceeding. It specifically qualifies that. And so what we're going to have are landlords who just pursue holdover eviction proceedings instead of non-payment eviction proceedings, knowing that there's no legal mechanism for that defense to be used in that type of action.
Yeah. And then even at the end, you only have 30 days and you have to pay all that back rent. So there's really no, or is there some long-term recovery plan for the renter?
Hi, I'm Joe Stefano from Athens, New York, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7, FM ECRA.
Hay acciones cotidianas para ayudar a prevenir la propagación de enfermedades respiratorias. Lávese las manos. Evite el contacto cercano con las personas enfermas. Evite tocarse los ojos, la nariz y la boca. Quédese en casa cuando esté enfermo. Cúbrase al toser o estornudar. Limpie y desinfecte de manera frecuente los objetos que toca. Para obtener más información, visite cdc.gov/COVID-19. Este mensaje es gentileza de la National Association of Broadcasters y de esta estación.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michelle Curtis of Perling, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Racism in America, from police brutality to COVID-19. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On Monday, Memorial Day, George Floyd was begging for his life as Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin pinned him to the pavement with his knee on his neck.
I cannot breathe.
Please, please, I can't breathe, officer. I can't breathe. George Floyd gasped while handcuffed. Onlookers demanded Chauvin relent, but he continued to drive his knee into Floyd's neck. A devastating 10-minute video recorded the slow-motion murder, breath by ebbing breath. Finally, Floyd's limp body is roughly rolled onto a stretcher, loaded into an ambulance, and taken to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. Outrage spread as the video went viral. George's brother, Philonis Floyd, told CNN,
"I love my brother. Everybody loved my brother. Knowing my brother is to love my brother. He screamed, 'Mama, Mama, I can't breathe. And it didn't care. So I just don't understand what Mo got to go through in life, man. They didn't have to do that to him."
Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said in a statement, "His life was important. It had value. We will seek justice and we will find it."
So what we're dealing with is not an isolated case. We're dealing with a systemic problem. And the investigation and the prosecution, if that happens, and the ultimate consequences, they are being handled. I'm confident that they're being handled competently, but that doesn't end it. The discharge of the officers doesn't end it. The criminal process that has begun doesn't end it. The civil rights process doesn't end it. We've got to have permanent, deep, systemic change.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey added, "Being black in America should not be a death sentence." Frey has called for Chauvin to be arrested, and Floyd's family wants all four officers charged with murder. Reverend Bernice King, one of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s children, tweeted a photo of Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck, juxtaposed with a photo of Colin Kaepernick, the star quarterback banned from the NFL for taking a knee during the national anthem, protesting police violence and racial injustice. King tweeted, If you're unbothered or mildly bothered by the first knee, but outraged by the second, then in my father's words, you're more devoted to order than to justice, and more passionate about an anthem that supposedly symbolizes freedom than you are about a black man's freedom to live, Bernice King tweeted. As U.S. COVID-19 deaths pass 100,000, disproportionately impacting communities of color, state-sanctioned murder and violence against people of color by police continues, seemingly unabated. Ahmaud Arbery was shot dead while jogging in Georgia on February 23rd by Travis McMichael and his father, retired police officer Gregory McMichael. On March 13th, Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old emergency medical technician, was shot 8 times and killed by Louisville, Kentucky police after they burst into her home in the middle of the night, entering the wrong apartment while looking for a suspect who was already in custody. Thankfully, we needn't add Christian Cooper's name to that tragic list. Chris Cooper, who's African-American, was bird-watching in New York Central Park on Memorial Day when he respectfully asked another person to abide by park rules and leash her dog. She adamantly refused, prompting him to record their interaction. She called 911, telling Cooper, "I'm going to tell them that there's an African-American man threatening my life." This is what he recorded.
"Could you please stop? Sir, I'm asking you to stop.
Please don't come close to me.
Sir, I'm asking you to stop recording me.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
I'm taking pictures and calling the cops.
Please, please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like."
Christian Cooper sent the video to his sister, who posted it to social media, where it took off, quickly rising to 42 million views. Someone identified the woman as Amy Cooper, no relation to Christian. And as a result of the backlash, she was fired from her job and the dog shelter took back her dog. Ibram X. Kendi, founding director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University, put their interaction in historical context on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
"What Amy Cooper did is typically the beginning of racist terror. You have a white woman weaponizing her white womanhood. And instead of seeking to resolve a dispute with another person and actually follow the rules and leash her dog, instead she projects herself as the victim and then calls the cops through that projection so they can come and protect her. And then oftentimes those cops actually believe that this white woman is aggrieved, is being threatened by this so-called super predator of an African-American male. And then oftentimes, or too often, it leads to that unarmed victim ultimately becoming harmed or even killed."
A similar fabricated exchange led to the torture and lynching of 14-year-old Emmett Till in 1955 in Money, Mississippi. Professor Kendi launched the COVID racial data tracker, documenting the disproportionate lethality of the pandemic in communities of color.
"It seems like at least by the latter part of March, certainly by early April, that it was Latino Americans and African Americans and Native Americans in particular who were disproportionately being infected and dying. And it really had to take many grassroots folks to begin demanding for racial data to even see this, because the states were refusing to do it."
Professor Kendi's using the data to debunk the argument that people of color suffer more COVID-19 infections due simply to underlying health conditions.
"What's more predictive of black infection and death rates are access to medical care, access to high quality health care, access to health insurance, even air and water pollution, employment status. All these social determinants of health are actually more predictive of black death and infection rates than their underlying conditions."
African Americans account for 13% of our population, but at least 25% of our 100,000 COVID-19 deaths. The same disproportionate death rate prevails among the 5,000 Americans killed by police since 2015. African Americans are twice as likely to be killed by police than are whites. Police violence is a leading cause of death for young men of color. The pandemic lays bare what cell phone and body camera videos have increasingly exposed, but communities of color have long known. Racism is alive and well in the United States, and it's deadly. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
From the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive, this is Karen Werner, and I'm excited to share a piece with you by the European radio artist Kate Donovan. Kate Donovan produced Chorus Duet for Radio in 2016. I love how Kate Donovan's radio art decenters us humans. She has an ongoing interest in elements and natural radio. Also noteworthy is her ideal listening situation for this piece. Quote, it's supposed to be broadcast on micro FM, amplified through multiple radios to an audience sitting on the floor in the near dark. My dream listener actually is listening at home alone in the dark, right before daybreak. End quote. Another of Kate Donovan's recent pieces, Night Call Radio, also has instructions for listening in the dark, and I have found that it's worth following this instruction if you can. Kate Donovan's Chorus Duet for Radio is about 13 minutes long.
This is the sound of a hummingbird. This little hummingbird has recently returned north. She's working on building a nest. It's about the size of a walnut and made of bud scales and is attached to a tree limb with spider silk. It will stretch to contain the growing nestlings. A few weeks ago, she took an immense journey to get here, some 18 hours straight over the Gulf of Mexico. In the balmy south, she fattened up, flew close to the water, skimmed the waves, and took advantage of favorable winds. She flew alone, and she has always flown alone, and she has always followed the exact same route as her ancestors, without ever being shown. Of course, this could lead us to wonder about hereditary memory and about navigational techniques. The sound of naturally occurring electromagnetic radio waves emitted from the Earth's magnetosphere. These sounds are known as chorus, or even dawn chorus, as they occur more often or are easier to capture in the early morning. Lower morning air temperatures and less active air currents may permit a dawn chorus song to travel further without as much interference. The earth radiates. On a geological timescale, the earth's magnetic field is very stable. On a spatial scale, it is also highly predictable. The perfect tool for migration. Hummingbirds are guided by the sun, the moon, the stars, the sights, the sounds, the scents along their route. But they are also internally aware of the complex pattern of magnetic variation. Hummingbirds have trace amounts of magnetite in their brains. The same material of the ancient lodestones that humans used to guide their journeys. Many migrating birds have a magnetite crystal located in their upper beak for magnetoreception. And it can be found in a diverse range of organisms, from fish to turtles, mollusks to bacteria. Magnetite in the human brain is theorized to affect long-term memory. Magnetite can be found in large quantities in beach sand. Rivers carry it to the beach from erosion, where it becomes concentrated via wave action and currents. In sedimentary rock, magnetite preserves a record of the Earth's magnetic field. This is the sound of a piano and cello sonata, recorded onto magnetic tape and the Ludwigshafen Theater in 1935. Early audio recordings used thin strips of paper coated with magnetite powder. Here, magnetite preserves a moment of musical vibration. This is the sound of a bird's dawn chorus. Birds sing out like this in the early hours of the morning to let everyone know that they've made it through the night. Migrating birds call out to let everyone know that they are here to claim or defend territory. Lower morning air temperatures and less active air currents may permit a dawn chorus song to travel further without as much interference. This is the sound of the bird's dawn chorus and the earth's dawn chorus. Shifting together as the planet turns, they usually sing at the same time. This is the sound of a chorus duet for radio. Thank you.
You just heard Kate Donovan's chorus duet for radio. To learn more about Kate Donovan and learn about a lot of other radio artworks, please visit the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Oh, Tim!